It's Friday, June 15th. This is Movie Press and another busy week of news. Ewan McGregor goes to sleep, Batfleck booted, and one arachnophobia, plus the box office. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talks, meet the movie press.
It seems there is never a quiet week in the world of Hollywood right now. The news is coming thick and fast. It's Friday, June 15th. I'm Simon Thompson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ShowbizSimon, and you can see my work in numerous places, including Forbes, Reuters, E! The BBC, Sci-Fi Now magazine. I'm running out of places to fire me. Basically. So I'm going to have to start my own website and fire myself. Okay, Scott and Dimitri, you are here with me again. Who are you and where can we find you? Dimitri.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Dimitri Panos. You can support me at DMovies1701, and I am part of the Popcorn Talk Network. Well, thank you for having me here on Meet the Movie Press, but I also do Anatomy of a Movie.
What are you covering this week?
This week we are going to do Hereditary and Ocean's 8.
Two great family movies.
A fantastic family movie.
Two great family movies.
Great. Yeah, happy-go-lucky stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Absolutely. And Scott, who are you? Where can we find you?
Hi there. I am Scott Menzel. You can find me on Instagram or Twitter at the other Scott M. I also run WeLiveEntertainment.com, and I do a show on Black Hollywood Live with Carla Renata called Black Tomatoes, where we talk about movies. So this week we're talking about The Incredibles, like everyone else, and we will be doing a little bit on the show today.
Awesome. We are. Let's talk about box office in a bit. Obviously, the huge movie this weekend is going to be Incredibles 2. That's going to be one of the things we'll talk about. But first of all, let's talk about Ewan McGregor. He's going to star in the Shining sequel, Dr. Sleep, obviously a book that Stephen King wrote when the original Shining movie came out. Stanley Kubrick directed it. Stephen King was not a fan. A lot of people have been waiting for the story of Danny to continue, which is basically the crux of Dr. Sleep, and that's who Ewan McGregor is going to play. Some interesting reactions to casting this week. When you saw this drop sort of, you know, early to middle week, what did you guys think? Scott, first of all.
Oh, I think Ewan McGregor is an amazing actor, and I think he's someone who could pretty much fit into any role. So I was excited about this casting.
Yeah.
I mean, when he really wants to be good, he can be fucking good.
And he's kind of lacked, for me, a little bit of a platform for that for a little while. He's done some really good movies, like Beginners was really good a few years ago. But a lot of the movies just haven't gained the audience. So for me, I'm like, it's finally giving him the platform that he really deserves.
Especially right after the Goodbye Christopher Robin movie or whatever it's called.
Yeah,
Christopher Robin.
That's the first
that's
one
out.
In years that's really given him that you know, above the line.
Yeah, and Stephen,
credit.
You know, and this guy Stephen King, if he keeps at it, he can
have
a career.
He sure can.
He can have a career. So
he's very much the it thing right now.
Absolutely.
So yeah.
That was a good one.
Thank you. There are plenty more puns coming my way.
You're punny. I think, number one, I read the book. And I was a fan of the book.
Okay.
I think it's really solid because it does take it where Danny is an adult now.
Yeah.
As soon as I read that he was cast as Danny, I was like, I'm in. Yeah. It's fine. I'm glad that they're making this movie. And obviously they're going to heap off of the large success that it had.
Yeah.
And when you're able to tie this into The Shining, and I'm sure they'll do a really good job. I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, there are a lot of Stephen King books that have been adapted and have not necessarily been handled particularly well. We still see that today. Dark Tower was a, you know, a real fumbled ball. But
it has new life.
But it has new life.
It does. They're talking about doing it into a TV show.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Well, I think, to be honest with you, I mean, that always, to me, I mean, originally when the movie was sort of, you know, first mentioned, I thought it was going to be really good as a big screen adventure. But just because of the serialization and the way that story unfolds, that does fit much better on TV.
Yes.
Having said that, some of Stephen King's stories have gone to TV and they haven't been handled particularly well. To me, I think my favorite Stephen King adaptation is The Mist.
Oh, really?
Love The Mist. I love The Mist.
Okay.
I love The Mist.
You know which one I liked that didn't get much love? Thinner.
So, yeah, I know. That got really overlooked. I think that was at a time where it was really cool to hate on Stephen King adaptations because there had been a few stinkers and that was kind of in vogue.
It was tough in the 80s because he was on TV and he was... his things were on TV.
Yeah,
he was everywhere.
He was everywhere, like The Stand. Even It was a mega miniseries, right? Yeah. And then he was breaking in his property with Brian De Palma doing Carrie, which I love Carrie.
Yeah.
Carrie is one of my favorites.
Yep.
I think another under
the remake was actually pretty good, to be honest with you.
I liked it too, the one with Chloe.
I actually enjoyed that one as well. I enjoy things I like
that others don't.
Christine. I enjoy Christine.
That's okay.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed Christine.
Christine
by John Carpenter.
Yeah.
And it had really good talent in there.
Yeah.
He was very popular in the 80s because of the miniseries.
Yeah.
And people were able to watch things like The Stand, which played great as a miniseries, right?
100%.
So now this amazing resurgence has come back to him, especially with It. And I think with Dr. Sleep, with the right marketing, you'll make it work. Like, try not to say it's too much of a sequel from The Stand because it's been how many years?
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about, too. I think if they market it too much like that, they can lose it, you know?
Yeah.
It was one of the things about Ready Player One. I mean, is this a spoiler at this point? But, you know, one of the scenes that they talked about there is the Shining sequence in that movie. And I feel like every movie buff, that was what they went to see that movie for. Like, everyone was like, you have to see this movie because of this sequence.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the movie did okay, but I think it did really well overseas, and that's not because of the Shining sequence.
Right. Yeah. Now, John Harrison is saying in the chat, this won't be anything as surreal as Kubrick's Shining, but he likes the casting and hoping for the best. That's really, really cool.
Yeah.
John then saying, The Mist has a great twist. The Mist, I think, to me, it was when it came out in the US, it didn't do well, and then it came out in the UK, and it was almost like a... It was almost hidden like a red-headed stepchild.
Yeah.
You know, it was really treated so badly, and I then discovered that on Home Entertainment, and I absolutely love that. And I actually introduced the black-and-white version of that movie. There's a two-disc... You can get it in the colour, and you can get it... They did it again in black and white. And Brian Fuller... obviously behind things like Hamilton, not Hamilton, Hannibal and things like that. He was not Star behind Trek. Hamilton. That was very much not Hamilton. Hannibal, and obviously he was, you know, part of the original sort of setup for Star Trek Discovery. I actually introduced that to Brian. He'd never seen it in black and white, and he sent me an email to thank me for introducing, because how awesome that is in black and white.
Well, maybe I will re-watch and revisit because
I think
of,
it's, yeah, I think it's... worth revisiting.
I think other ones, Pet Sematary is very dark.
Which, again, is being remade.
Yeah, I know.
Which
yeah,
is great
but
with
that
great
one's
comment.
So cheesy, and it does not hold
oh,
up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just actually recently saw it again.
I didn't feel it at
I
all.
Recently watched the sequel with Edward Furlong.
Yeah.
It came on cable. I think I was just finishing off a bottle of wine, and I was just about to go to bed, and I was like... This looks fucking awful. And it is. It's even worse than I remembered it.
Yeah.
So it's terrible.
I don't mind Pet Sematary. What was the other one? Cujo.
Cujo's not too bad. Actually, it hasn't aged well, though.
Again, it's been on cable. I just actually watched it again. And there's a really great performance by E.T. Mom. I can't think of her name right now.
Now you've said that, I've totally blanked on her name as
You're
well.
You're welcome.
God damn it.
But
yeah.
When you look at what they were trying to attempt, I mean, his stuff is dark.
Yeah.
And I felt that at least in Pet Sematary, that movie's dark. It was a dark book, and I'm watching it going, I'm amazed that they even tried to make this as a movie. It'll be interesting to see what they do with this remake.
100% agree. John Harrison saying, Frank Darabont directed The Mist, Thomas Jane's best performance ever. Absolutely agree. And Zeno Hour, oh, I love this. Zeno bringing it home. A game again. Imagine David Fincher directing a Salem's Lot movie.
Oh. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
I'm literally going to the AMC now.
Yeah.
To line up for that, and he hasn't even signed up for it. That's a really good idea. Gold star
so,
for that
too.
Shit.
Yeah, and that was a great miniseries, David Soul.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, really good. I actually recently rebought that on Blu-ray because I hadn't seen
Did
it for
really?
So long. Yeah. And my wife's away next weekend, so I think I'm going to stick a couple of movies on in between work that I've got on. But
you got time for that?
Ain't nobody got time for that. I'll make time for that. I'm doing Ant-Man and the Wasp stuff next weekend, which I'm super psyched about.
Well,
but yeah.
For you.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on. I just wanted to drop that in there. Let's move on to the question. Is Matt Reeves rebooting the Batman without Ben Affleck? ?
Hasn't this been speculation for
the longest time?
Ever since he got...
Yeah. Justice League came out after Justice League came out.
Well, and they said he's not directing Batman. And he was like, fine, yeah. I'll just stay with the character.
It resurfaced again this week. To me, I've never been attached to Ben Affleck as Batman. I think he's done, you know, a decent job. He's just never really, for me, given me that connection that pretty much everyone apart from Clooney and Kilmer have done with that character. Those guys, I mean, they did a, you know, decent enough job, but it wasn't the same as, say, you know, Michael Keaton's Batman or Christian Bale's Batman. No.
Adam West's Batman.
If Affleck left, that wouldn't affect me. The only thing is obviously then it will be a little bit weird if they do continue to do things like Justice League and ensemble movies.
I think it would be weird for him to leave at this point because he just got started with this character. But also, he's kind of on a downward slump right now in terms of his career. I mean, his first two directorial movies were really well-received. Yeah. And then the Mafia one, which came out 2 years ago. I forgot the name of it. Do you remember?
It was like The Last Night or The Long Night.
That one just didn't wow anyone, I feel like. And I'm usually very forgiven on movies like that, and I thought it was just forgettable stuff. Like, I can't even remember the title. None of us can. So there you go.
It's been on cable a lot, and it has a really great
because I can remember
the
other
one,
Town and Argo. Yeah. But he's really been, like, on a downward slump.
You also forgot about Gone Baby Gone.
That's right. Oh, yes, Gone Baby Gone.
You forgot Gone Baby Gone, The Town, and then Argo.
Yeah.
Live by Night.
Live by Night was not...
Yeah, and that's sort of, you know, when to your point, that's sort of when things... It was Live by Night, and then definitely after Batman v Superman,
but he
nobody
also had...
credited him for, like... Everybody liked him. In fact, in Batman v Superman, if my memory serves, they did say they liked him as Batman.
I preferred him in that to Injustice League.
Absolutely.
The performances seemed quite different. Yeah.
Yes.
In feel and tone, and slightly totally disjointed.
Well, that's because there was two directors.
That
in
is
Justice
true,
League.
And a lot of the Batman stuff was filmed quite far apart. So that doesn't
but
help.
But also, everyone forgets that he was going through stuff.
Yeah,
you know, during those periods.
I think also an element that is 100% true, and I think also there are great actors who sometimes, when the directors are not quite right for them, there's something that doesn't quite connect. And I think when you get the right, the talent can be doing a great job. And then if you get a great director to come with it, they bring something else out, which really cements it. And I think with so many of the other Batman, you've been able to do that. You've had directors like Tim Burton and that kind of, who've really got it. And there's been that connection and the actors have been 100% into it. And so that it was, and you got that 200% action. And I just think it just didn't. No disrespect to Zack Snyder or anybody, because there's some of Zack's work which I absolutely love, so I'm not a Snyder hater. But for me, it just hasn't gelled in the right way. And for someone like Ben, who loves Batman,
he does,
to not be able to deliver that super Batman, the ultimate Batman, something's not quite right.
I disagree. I thought in Batman versus Superman, I thought that he was great in the role, and that I agree with you. I remember there was, if nothing else, even the people who did not like that movie were praising his performance as Batman and said that he had the potential of being the best Batman to date. And then what happened was Justice League got such mixed reviews because of all the crap that went down with that movie that everyone started this rumor pool of like, oh, he's going to go away, no one wants him anymore. I think he would be foolish. I'm going to just say it. I think he would be foolish to walk away, especially with Matt Reeves. Because Matt Reeves, I think that would be a combination that I think could work.
But for me, with the Zack Snyder thing, I agree that he was really good as Batman in the first one. But then again, I didn't really like that film. But of the two things,
but people were complaining about Wonder Woman in Justice League as well.
Yeah. But I just think that then there's the inconsistency by it's the same director, but it doesn't gel to me. There's something in that mix that it doesn't quite. isn't quite right. If it's inconsistent.
I don't.
But Matt Reeves could direct the shit out of a paper bag.
I just think they should give him one more. Give him another shot. Don't abandon ship yet. And to say that he's been on a sort of a downturn. I mean, The Accountant was a hit for him. I mean, he didn't direct it, but you know, he did. People liked him in that. He loves Batman. He has gone out on talk shows saying how he's even showed up for his kids' parties, like where he asked Warner Brothers, can I borrow the costume because I'm going to show up at a party? So, like, he's embraced the character. In fact, I was looking forward to him directing a Batman movie.
Just because that would have been a good idea.
Just because he Live by Night did what Live by Night did.
We brought this up, I think, last week. Is like, why are people so unforgiving about a person?
That was Clint Eastwood. Yeah, that was unforgiving.
No, not unforgiving. You know, they just don't. They don't give people different chances. Sorry.
No, you're right.
It's like someone could be on a roll, and then all of a sudden they fall off the bandwagon one time. And then it's like, oh, screw this guy. He sucks. I don't get it.
Every director and every actor and every producer and every writer has a bum note or two in that thing. I mean, look at Francis Ford Coppola. Hello, Jack. Really good example.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Okay, some stuff in the chat on this. Some really good points, actually. Looking at recasting, Zias B. Liu says, John Berthold. Berthold? I always get his
name.
Berenthal? Yeah. I always get his name wrong.
From Walking Dead.
Carl Urban, Jensen Ackles, or Armie Hammer if and when Ben Affleck leaves. Some really interesting suggestions there. Crazy idea. Two Joker movies, two Batman movies. Let Affleck and Reeves do more movies. Not a bad idea. We touched on David Fincher earlier. I mean, I would not be adverse to someone like... And someone said, whenever there's something dark and somber, Fincher's name always come up. Yeah, that is true. But I would be really interesting to see what someone like David Fincher could do with Ben Affleck as Batman.
He would definitely have
Matt Reeves, I do agree, would be a really good mix.
I think he's a solid director. But the other thing, too, that we've neglected to say, that even within the past 2 weeks, there's been turmoil in the DC movie universe.
And we'll mention some of that later on, yeah.
Yeah, so this, I think, is lending fuel to that fire.
Right.
But I think Matt Reeves is a very capable action director. He knows 100%. Storytelling.
100%.
You know, Ben Affleck is still good regardless of, you know, his personal issues that he's had.
Zeno Hour saying, I'm very fatigued about the Batfleck saga. If he stays, great. If he leaves, there are plenty of actors who would be great as Batman. I 100% agree. We're very lucky at the moment. There are many people who could fill those shoes. They wouldn't have to struggle and it wouldn't be a last minute casting, and they don't even have to stunt cast, you know, which is great. Let's stick with DC for a second, because obviously we found out this week, and we discussed this on the show quite recently, about the Wonder Woman sequel and what the title's going to be. You might remember about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think it was you and I were discussing about the fact that a load of domain names had been registered by Warner Brothers for possible names for the movie, including Wonder Woman Cheetah and blah, 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 etc., etc., and lots of 80s dates. We found out this week that it's Wonder Woman 84. Which means it's going to be set in the 80s. So we kind of knew that was going to be a possibility. And we found out this week that Steve Trevor is going to be coming back. So Chris Pine is on Chris duty, coming back as Steve Trevor, who, spoiler if you haven't seen Wonder Woman, supposedly died at the end of the first one. If you haven't seen Wonder Woman, I just fucked that up for you. Sorry, but you've had like 18 months, almost 2 years. So, you know.
Now, they had a full year today. I think it's like a full year. June 1st.
Yeah, almost a full year. So that's on you.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked, and there was debate about this week, I liked Steve Trevor. I liked the character. I think he added something. And I'm very, I'm confused as to why he's still there. But I'm also very interested in how he is going to be there.
Wonder Woman correspondent. She builds a time machine.
To bring
him back.
She does.
That's how she flew around the Earth in the invisible plane.
Yeah, exactly. That's how she did it.
counterclockwise.
She built a time machine. No. She went to Marty McFly. She said, you know what?
Are we sure it's not?
Can you stop trying to finger bang your mum?
Isn't that nice?
For 5 minutes.
Isn't that nice? Geez, that puts a whole new... God, don't make me disgusted of a movie that I love. Oh, God. But...
He doesn't.
Could he be a junior? I mean, it's...
Should be.
It's, you know, I know that the casting of Chris Pine, I know that you can't keep that under wraps. Okay?
Right, yeah.
So, but it would have been nice. I mean... We are in an age where we have to have information now.
We have to have information now.
And then we get the information and we blab all about it. And then a week before the movie, it's like, don't spoil the movie for me.
Ashley, my wife said it's his grandson.
It could be.
Could be.
That would make sense timeline-wise.
Zias in the chat saying there are so many rumors about Trevor being Manhunter, Hawkman, Phantom Stranger, or Spectre. They're all theories. There are so many theories.
I just don't want
to
know.
I don't want to know. I want to get in there and find out what
Why doesn't anyone want to be surprised anymore?
They don't. And then when they don't get what they think it should be, then they get pissed. Do you know what?
That's not true. I mean, I always want to be surprised by movies, but I wake up every single day and I'm fucking surprised.
Yeah.
What, did you awaken?
Do you know, some days, yes. So interesting. We know the name and title of Wonder Woman now. I mean, I really enjoyed Wonder Woman. It was one of my favorite movies of the year.
Yes.
It was a great superhero movie, and to me it's the best one that I think DC have done, you know, just above Man of Steel, which, you know, that's got its haters, but I really love that movie. You know, I saw it twice.
Did I miss 81 of those movies? If we're at 84?
Yeah, yes, you've got a little bit of catch. You can binge.
I actually like that title. I sort of like Wonder Woman 84.
I think it's good. Yeah. I mean, I was a little bit like, I don't know, I'm not so sure about it, but I do quite like
it. And we need a Linda Carter cameo. Now.
Linda Carter could turn up in anything, and I would be absolutely delighted.
Same here.
When I was a kid, how can I say, she awakened me as a young man. Watching Wonder Woman, I just want to see that invisible fucking plane back.
That was any yeoman in Star Trek for me.
Or
in the original.
Nice. Okay, there was a story that did the rounds last weekend, which was actually quite hilarious. I'm amazed people fell for it. The rumors of Back to the Future 4. Somebody has created a couple of years ago a fake Michael J. Fox account, and basically because it was his birthday a few days ago. Put that they've been filming Back to the Future 4, original cast are coming back, it's almost done, and this fake Michael J. Fox account was going to be announcing the release date. So many people fell for this. I kind of took it upon myself, and the Back to the Future account, they also did this. It's okay, no, this is bullshit. And then this person was saying that Kendrick Lamar was involved in the movie, and some unknown rapper who I think was basically the guy that set up the whole Michael J. Fox thing, which is playing the long game, to be honest with you. That is
God
so kind of kudos to that.
Yeah.
But a lot of people fell for this. My favorite, letting someone know that Back to the Future 4 was actually not happening, was some guy who I think is in like Oklahoma or Kansas or somewhere. When I told him that it wasn't happening, he asked me to prove who I was, because I have a picture of me with The Rock and Kevin James. Right. So he was like, bullshit, or it didn't happen. And I'm like, okay, well, here's the original picture and some other, this is what I do for a living. To which he responded, right, okay, now send me a picture of your dick.
Oh.
Because apparently, that's what you need for verification now. So if you're wondering, if you ever get stopped by the police and they ask for your photo ID to prove who you are, just show them your dick. Because apparently that's a great secondary form of identification.
Yeah.
So that's quite funny.
That would be, seriously.
Yeah, so apparently that's what you do now. I'm just amazed that people fell for that story this week. We're talking about Leia Thompson and Back to the Future. Staggering.
It's staggering, and it's stupid, too.
Really stupid. I mean, it's like, fuck's sake, come on.
Yeah. On one hand, though, it does show that there is still a lot of love and a lot of clamoring for more Back to the Future.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Which, okay. And the movies have grown they've grown with age wonderfully, I think. I mean,
seriously.
The viewability factor, and they've been on cable a lot.
Countless,
some of them,
several formats and repertory. You know, movie theaters around the US and in the UK, they regularly show them and they sell out.
And they show them, you know, in order 100%. And everything. And there are great conventions that people can go to.
Yeah, yeah.
So last summer I went to. I don't know, one of those outdoor theaters.
Do you mean next summer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Next summer. So at least it shows that, but there is just that, how can you believe that? I mean, if they're going to release, I mean, you would figure that there would be news about that. Like prior to this website, Universal or Robert Zemeckis or somebody. And to Robert Zemeckis' credit, I'm just so happy that he's like, no, they are not going to take this from me. They're not going to reboot it. They're not going to remake it like until my dying day. And so I hope he lives forever.
God.
Spoiler alert, he won't.
He won't. Oh, what? John Harrison saying in the chat, just reboot Back to the Future 2, get Robert Downey Jr. as Doc and a new actor for Marty. No. Zaya saying, Simon and Scott, will you discuss Jordan Peele pitching a live-action adaptation of the Gargoyles animated Disney series? That is coming up later in the show. Yeah. That is on our list of things to talk about. So, yeah. Zeno Hour saying, The Rock as Doc, Kevin Hart as Marty. Do you know what? That's a fucking stupid idea, but I would watch that. But I mean, don't I'm not Hollywood, don't do it. But I would watch a, not Back to the Future, but a time travel movie with The Rock and Kevin Hart. So playing on like the idea behind Back to the Future, I would watch a movie. I don't want to see them do Back to the Future reboot or a remake or a sequel with them in it. But I think that'd be quite cool. I just love the Back to the Future movies. Okay, talking of remakes. Talk about this at the top of the show. Usually, I'm a little bit concerned about people rebooting movies that I particularly love, especially ones that are a little bit kooky. James Wan. This week, news that he's apparently developing an Arachnophobia remake at Amblin.
Well, I'll tell you.
Okay.
This one.
Tell me, Scott.
Is going to do okay.
Yes.
And I'll tell you why. Because no one fucking knows about the original besides us.
But you're right. Because, like, if you do reboots, you do B-movie reboots. You
Right.
Like, don't do classic movies. No. Don't do movies that are well-known.
No. Yep.
Do the little known. I mean, because it wasn't a huge hit when it came out. And these are the movies. And in fact, I say go even farther back. Mm. Go to the 50s or the 60s. Look for these B-movies that you can recultivate and bring them into today's world.
Yep.
I got no problem with Arachnophobia.
No.
That was wasn't it Frank Marshall who directed that movie?
I think it could have been
his first direct. It could have been his directorial debut. I'm not entirely sure.
I remember when that movie came out and nobody that I knew wanted to go and see it. It was like the same with The Rocketeer. Nobody wanted to go and see The Rocketeer. And there's two movies that I absolutely love. I fucking love The Rocketeer.
I'm not kidding about this. Back in Boston, I worked for a radio station and we did promotions with ad agencies. And I actually went to New England or Boston movie theaters as The Rocketeer.
Wow.
Yeah, sort of fun. But I remember when Arachnophobia came out and I went to a screening of it, and everybody was, like, squirming in their seats. Don't put your foot in that slipper! Stuff like that. The movie worked.
It did work. It was Frank Marshall who directed. It came out July 18th, 1990. Kind of got swallowed up a little bit by the summer. Made for 31, only made 53.2. Not a monster hit. A monster hit. It obviously wiped its face, but it wasn't exactly a huge hit. But I actually...
The Warlock was in it.
A lot of my nephews who love movies, especially the middle one, I bought him a load of movies for the holidays last year. Movies sort of from the 80s and 90s and early 2000s that, you know, not necessarily like, oh, Citizen Kane. But here are movies that I think you should be aware of sort of culturally. And Arachnophobia is one of those. Unfortunately, I forgot that he's terrified of spiders.
Oh.
So he hasn't watched it yet. Arachnophobia is a great movie. I mean, I really think that even when it came out, it deserved a lot more love than it got. And I think James Wan would do a really nice, make it a really nice PG-13, just scary enough, but not too scary, but still enough to give you the willies.
Get John Goodman to come back.
That was going to be my next thing. John Goodman back or John Goodman not back?
Back.
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 Yeah, 100%.
What's he got to do now?
Yeah. Oh, too soon? Too soon. So I was genuinely psyched with that.
Came back from the dead.
That is true. That's true. Okay, let's rattle through a few other stories because we've got a lot to get through today. We were talking about DC earlier. We understand now that Green Lantern Corps, the movie, is going to be written and directed by Geoff Johns, who also, it was announced this week, is stepping down as the DC Entertainment president to set up his own production company, which is going to make, by the looks of it, Green Lantern Corps. Green Lantern was a horrible, horrible movie.
Oh, it was
terrible movie.
Atrocious.
I remember doing the junket for that in London. I sat down with Mark Strong and I sat down with Ryan, and everybody knew what it was. It was not a good movie. It still did okay box office. It's okay. It didn't do disgusting box office. I'm really up for revisiting that. But I want to see them do something interesting with it. And I think Geoff is possibly the guy to do that. You don't think so?
Why do you think not? For comic books, the man is a genius.
Right.
And I will go so far as, because of him, he really kept Green Lantern modern, current, and amazing. And it's when I started reading Green Lantern.
Yeah.
With a regularity, because, well, I had some friends go, you'd like this, it's science fiction, and it really is. And I totally got into these amazing, fantastical science fiction stories, and they were adventures, and they were fantastic, and they were all helmed by Geoff Johns. Once he came to DC, I think he learned a lot, like movie making, movie storytelling is a lot different than comic book storytelling.
Yeah.
And I don't think he has a good handle on movie storytelling, to be honest with you. Because he did write, if I am correct, we can look it up, but he did have a hand in that Green Lantern. And no one was more surprised, because I was looking forward to that movie.
Yeah.
And I felt that Ryan Reynolds was perfect for that role.
Yep. I didn't dislike him in the role. I just thought the film was terrible.
The movie was off the rails, and I don't know. I'm not sure he's up for the task.
Some chat on this.
He's done work on Justice League. He's done work now on Aquaman. He's doing the screenplay for Wonder Woman.
Aquaman, which looks great, and Wonder Woman, which was great.
Yeah. No. This new Wonder Woman, 1984.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, so he's part of this. So his hand is heavily in the DC universe right now, and I think if these two movies are hits, which Aquaman, I think, is really going to be a surprise this year. At the end of the year, they moved up the release date. Right. I think it's going to be big, and needless to say, Wonder Woman 2 is going to be.
Oh, 100%. Sky Patterson reaffirming some details. Geoff Johns co-writing and producing, yes, Green Lantern. No director, cast, or crew being attached. That's absolutely correct.
Yep.
Okay, a couple of other things on this. Zeno Hour saying, reboot Hudson Hawk, damn it. Yes! Absolutely.
But are you going to find a better matchup than Bruce Willis and Danny Aiello?
No. I love that movie. I literally watched that in an empty theater. Yeah. Ashley Menzel is in the chat.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to keep this family. I want to see a remake of Carnival of Souls. I like Ashley. It's a fucking good idea.
Yeah.
I love that. I want to see a remake of Freaks. I love that movie. That's some shit. Fucked up. John Harrison, speaking of James Wan, Aquaman still looks amazing. Absolutely. John saying again, War of the Worlds is all right. The first hour is very intense.
Yes.
Zeno saying, should they reboot Cobra? Could be something interesting in today's environment. I'd be up for that. And Sarah Brockle, or someone claiming to be Sarah Brockle, is in the chat saying, Green Lantern is a classic. Come on, lol. Good to see Martin Campbell, the director of Green Lantern,
right,
in the chat this morning. Or Sarah, as he apparently also likes to be known. I'm just kidding. Thanks, Sarah, for contributing to that. Look, you know, there are sometimes people like movies that we don't like, and that this is something that gets me all the time, and there's a lot of this around at the moment. Let's touch on this very, very quickly. If you like a movie and someone else doesn't like a movie,
yes,
or you don't like a movie and someone else likes a movie, that's totally fine.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it is.
If you love a franchise and you don't like a movie in that franchise, it doesn't mean you should send threats to the director or the cast of that movie. It's totally fine. You don't own this.
No.
Unless you're putting money into these things, you don't own them. You love them, you have an affinity to them, you don't own them. Be nice.
Be nice. But yeah.
It's totally fine.
The other thing that's great.
There's no right and wrong.
There isn't. Well, there is. I'm from right.
Yeah, I mean, no, sometimes there is. You know, if we like it, then it's right. But I'm just kidding.
But the other great thing with movies is, though, like, I can recognize a bad movie, but still like it. Like, 100%. I'm a big Star Trek fan, right? So there is no way in hell that I can go out and say Star Trek: The Final Frontier is a good movie.
Mm.
It's not, but like as a it. Guilty pleasure, yeah. And as a, and I can find some humor in it, and the line, well, what does God need with a starship? It's great stuff. I mean, I can recognize
just to run around
when it's a bad
yeah.
movie, and I can say, look, I know this is a bad movie. I know people don't like it, but for me, like Sucker Punch.
Oh, I like Sucker Punch.
Sucker Punch isn't a good movie.
No.
It got vilified.
Yeah.
But I watch it just because. I mean, it's
totally fine.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's totally fine.
I will say, this is not a good movie, but it's a guilty pleasure for me. I enjoy watching.
But also, nobody's making you go to see franchise movies if you're just... It's like,
no.
So many times I got burned by Transformers. So do you know what? With the last one, I just didn't go.
Right.
I just didn't
and
watch it.
A lot of people didn't either.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, that is true. But it's kind of like, the audiences didn't go.
Right.
I got invited to previous screenings. I didn't go. Do you know it's on Amazon Prime? I could watch it for nothing.
Nope.
I haven't watched it.
See, and there,
which is fine.
I will point out...
But you know, I've had
a good time with the Transformers.
Yes. No, did you really?
I swear.
Oh, okay.
I am not.
But Bumblebee
like,
looks great.
I don't want to defend Transformers.
That's what I'm saying. That looks great.
So I'm coming back for that one.
Yeah. But, no, but Bumblebee looks good, and I'm not defending the Transformer movies. They make my brain hurt.
Yeah.
But that's why I've had like a good time
fun with them.
Watching them.
All right.
Like I know that I'm going in there. And it's just going to twist my head around, and it'll be some existential experience. And you know,
I've never heard a Transformers movie being being described as that.
That's because you haven't watched it with the right audience.
Oh,
like, yeah. My hair
I think
hurts
I have.
When I walk out of there. I mean, I get dizzy. I lose a sense of smell.
I watched it
when
in
I've
Philly.
Watched them.
Do you know what I there's something that I lose when I watch the Transformers movies, and that's the will to live.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
But that's fine. But I'm very happy that you like this.
I saw the last one. Funny story. I don't usually text her. I'm not usually on my phone. But I went to see it at a little theater in Sherman Oaks, the Pacific one by the Best Buy. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because nobody goes to that theater and they have a balcony. So during that entire movie, I just like sat in the back row on my phone and I just kept like texting and tweeting during it because I just didn't fucking care. There you go. That's my love.
That's cool.
Good
to go. Let's talk about some quick casting stuff because we've still got a lot to get through. Jackie Chan and John Cena teaming up for Project X. Cena is replacing Sly Stallone on that. Do you know what? I'm up for this.
Is this the remake of the Matthew Broderick movie and the monkey?
It is not. But now I want that. I'd be up for that. That's a great Matthew Broderick movie.
God, this show is bad influence on the industry. Like, I want that. Keep remaking things.
That's actually not a bad movie.
It's a good movie. Yeah. It's a great movie. It's a good movie.
Remake it.
Yeah.
Now.
They should remake Space Camp.
Space Camp.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
It's a fun movie.
I don't know.
It's a really good movie.
Can they remake that, though, and still have the campiness of the original?
I hope so.
They should do it Space Camp, where everybody in it is slightly camp.
Yeah.
And they all go to space. That would be quite fun. It'd be like a carry-on movie from like the 1950s and 60s. You're like, oh, where are you going? Uranus. There you go. See, that's at least one line of the script written. I would watch that movie. I might write that movie. Gal Gadot. Many people refer to her as many things. Whichever way you want to talk about it. Teaming up with Dwayne Johnson for the action comedy Red Notice. Good to see them back together.
I am down for this.
I'm very down for that. I genuinely like her. She was not good in that comedy, The Joneses.
Keeping Up with the Joneses.
Keeping Up with the Joneses.
See, again,
I enjoyed that too. I thought the women that. In that movie were great, but not the guys. The girls were
not
great,
a big fan
though.
Of that movie, but I did, you know, I enjoyed her in it. I'm a big supporter of her work. I loved her as Wonder Woman. I think she's great. Yeah. And I think she has a really nice delivery, but it's ever so slightly deadpan.
Yeah,
sure.
And I do really like that about her. So I think if she's delivering some of these funny lines in an action movie with Dwayne Johnson, I think it'll really be good.
It's
for
a
him.
Good matchup, I think.
It's a really good matchup, so I'm super psyched.
And
that.
They can get the Entertainment Weekly sexiest movie couple.
Oh, yeah. MTV right award, give it to them right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Comcast officially put in a $65 billion dollar bid for Fox this week. Tops the Disney bid by some margin.
Yeah,
by quite some margin. So it's not like, I'll raise you a dollar. you know, this is not Trading Places.
In cash.
It's interesting to see this. I mean, if the Fox deal doesn't go ahead with Disney and it does go to Comcast, that it changes the landscape in a very different way to, I think, how Disney would do it. I think certainly when it comes to some of the more mature content that Fox creates, so
yes,
the likes of Deadpool and stuff like that. And I think also from Comcast, obviously being part of the same family as the Universal theme parks, opens up a lot of opportunities in that area for realizing IPs. I think we could see some really interesting stuff around there.
I'm hoping that deal goes through for various reasons. Number one, Disney, it would just be not fair. I mean, there would be hazards of it all.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people would lose jobs over it. And I just don't like the idea. I think with Comcast, they'll keep the people in play. It'll operate as it is. And they'll still be Fox, 20th Century Fox,
yep,
Fox, right, whatever you want to call it, it'll still be Fox. And then at that point, what could happen is, much like they made the deal, and they being Disney, made the deal with Sony to do Spider-Man,
right?
Then they'll just make the deal with Comcast or whatever they're calling it, to get the X-Men and to get Fantastic Four in. And
yeah,
in this way, a lot of people don't lose jobs, like good jobs that they've been there for years.
Yeah.
Fox continues to go on. They'll continue with Fox Searchlight. So we'll still have that. They can still make rated R movies. Mm. They don't have to be, it would be to me, too much for Disney, too homogenized. You own what you don't own enough.
So yeah, that's what I'm saying. Lucasfilms and most of the Marvel studios, like, it's like you got enough.
It's,
guys.
It Pixar in animation.
Yeah.
And
it's just not fair. Niche. It's like every time like one of those movies come out from a Disney studio, it's like it's so much higher at the box office than any other film.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe Jurassic World is going to be that one, the Fallen Kingdom one.
Yeah.
This might be the one that's going to finally like break that,
yeah,
you know, and it did with the first one. But like for the most part, you look at that list, I think it was like the 10 most the most successful movies at the box office.
Yeah.
And I think like 8 of the 10 are Disney released films.
Right.
And that's bullshit.
It's I'm happy for what Disney has
been
able
to
accomplish, but
spread the wealth around. This is a monopoly coming on.
And it's I don't find it being good for business.
No, it's not
at all. And I just think that Disney has what they have. They're good at what they're putting out, but 20th Century Fox has a history. I don't necessarily want to see Die Hard go to Disney.
How about the Alien movies?
But I would see Die Hard going to Universal because you know.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I could see
that. That's been fumbled so badly that
maybe
franchise.
Warner Brothers will step in and put in a deal.
Die Hard Universe.
There you go.
You know, I just think that if Comcast buys them, I believe things will stay the same on the Fox lot. I don't think they're going to move those people over up to the Valley.
Yeah.
There's
not enough room.
No.
So they would, I mean, physically I spend a lot of time at Universal and I was there again yesterday, but they don't have the footprint to be able to add that. So they would need to have Fox as an ancillary, you know, and they're what they call open sets. They're both basically, they're free sets where if you are not Universal or if you're not Fox, if you want to go and film on those sets, and Warner Brothers is the same, you can hire for your company to come in and film on these lots. That's why a lot of movies that aren't Warner movies, you can see that they were filmed backstage at Warner. Right. Same with Universal. So I think that, to be honest with you, would actually offer a lot more opportunities.
Well, the Fox lot's a pretty sweet lot, too.
Awesome. Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, yeah. But also, Disney doesn't have that facility where you can do the backstreet scenes. It doesn't have the living studio element to it.
Yeah.
You know, the really active studio. So I think it would be really... I also would prefer, out of the two, to see Comcast, because nothing against Disney. But I just think that the opportunities and the way that the landscape would become... stable, but also strengthened, I think would be really, really good. And I think there's so many opportunities with IPs, and also for a lot of archive stuff that I think we could bring back. So I mean, I'm hopefully optimistic about that.
Yeah, it will be interesting watching it to see what Disney will come up with.
Yeah.
So they're either going to come up with a close to equal bid and then offer something else that we might not know that's on the table.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an interesting deal. I was very surprised. I mean, $65 billion. And I think Disney's was 40 to 45. Mm. They were like $20 billion more. It was substantial. They made it like they're at auction. And they just put in a bid to try to just knock them out.
What do you think it is that's delaying this so much?
Well, I don't think anything's really going to be delayed. I think it's what Fox. It's how much money can I make? It's money.
Yeah.
How much money can we get from this? Okay, Disney, come on with a bid. I think the highest bidder is going to win. And I think with the deal that just came through this past week between AT&T and Time Warner.
Oh yeah.
I haven't seen. Jesus Christ, the merger of Sirius XM took like 5 years.
Yeah.
This was done, and like once they said yes, it's like done.
Yeah.
And that was a huge multi-billion dollar deal. That's what fueled the fire to get this Disney Comcast or this Fox Comcast deal.
We've got a lot to get through. No, it's totally fine. Anthony, can we get a couple more minutes on the show? Fantastic. Oh, you sound so excited about that.
He was enthused.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah,
cool.
Okay, cool.
That's better. That's cool. Okay, so let's talk about, before we get to box office, a couple of other things that we need to talk about. Jordan Peele reportedly wanting to direct a Gargoyles movie at Disney. Do you remember the cartoon?
Yes, I do.
From the 80s.
Yes,
right. That was not huge in the UK. I absolutely loved it. Yeah, it strangely wasn't very popular compared to so
it
many other things.
It wasn't that popular here either.
I loved it.
It had a...
I tried to get my friends into it at the time, but they weren't up for it.
Right, that it developed a cult following more. It wasn't like a Chippendale Rescue Rangers or a DuckTales.
And it sold toys.
Yes, right.
It sold toys.
Right.
Yeah. I'm
excited.
I'm up for that. I think it'd be because if you don't know about gargoyles, basically they're these gargoyles that come to life at night and they keep watch and they fight crime in the city of it was New York, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. There's so many possibilities that you could do with that. And I think it's something for Disney, which is obviously excelling with superhero stuff, but it kind of takes that trope of the Guardian and it takes it in a slightly different direction. So it does offer that thing to the viewer who's like might be a little bit superhero fatigued, still keeps that Guardian element and it offers it in a different way.
Yeah.
I think it's a really, really good idea, and I do like the work of Jordan Peele.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I'm very excited to see what he's putting out next. He is very busy though with a number of sort of TV projects and film stuff. So I don't know when or if this would see the light of day.
It would be great to reboot this from a cinematic standpoint.
Yes.
Disney would be able to capitalize on all of their platforms, you know, especially the theme parks.
Yes.
I mean, to have gargoyles walking around the theme parks.
A lot of things.
Merchandise, baby! Merchandise!
Can we slip it on some shites?
Spaceballs and flamethrowers.
Yeah. I mean, genuinely, when I saw this news, it was like, to me, it's as exciting, if not more exciting, than, and I loved He-Man, but a He-Man Mars the Universe movie. I'm still holding out for Thundercats.
There is a guilty pleasure. But I think if they were able to do Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Now, Gargoyles was nowhere near the popularity of that.
No.
But you could do a good theatrical in today's world. I think it's worthy.
100% agree. Sarah Brockle saying, in caps, I have ticket money for this Gargoyles movie. I have money for a collector's edition. Which is great. Which is very enthusiastic. And then in not caps, Gargoyles is one of my favorite animated things ever. Sarah, we are...
Fun fact, only ran for 3 seasons.
Yeah.
And it was from 94 until 97.
Zeno Arrow saying Gargoyles is one of the best themes ever. Yeah, John Harrison saying Lion-O! Yeah, me, I want a Thundercats too. John Harrison Thundercats is a guilty pleasure. The animation was on point. I recently bought a load of these 80s cartoons on DVD. I bought real Ghostbusters. I got Dungeons and Dragons. God, what else did I buy?
Clearance rack from Target?
No, it was they were on Amazon. Dungeons and Dragons was pretty expensive.
Walmart, let's be honest.
Seriously, man. But I bought a load of these Thundercats. I bought. I love this shit. A load of He-Man stuff.
I love.
No, it's great. That's cool. Also, Thundercats is a good pleasure. The animation is so on point. I think. And Sky Patterson saying Jordan Peele and a live action Gargoyles film at Disney. Could be very cool and interesting, but would Disney really want it?
Yes.
Yeah, I think they would.
Yes, they would.
They would because
they're all about the diversity right now.
Yeah, they're looking for everything that they've got that's a superhero or a Star Wars thing. They are looking for those Christopher Robins. They're looking for those different projects that also make sure to go alongside their animation stuff. I think this would work really, really well. And the opportunities creatively could be you could then have real sets. You can have CGI gargoyles. You could physically create costumes for. There are so many really interesting opportunities creatively
doing
for that.
Something different.
Yeah.
All right.
Which people aren't doing.
Right. You're delivering something different than a Marvel movie, different than a Star Wars movie.
Yes.
This is an old Disney franchise. Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's great. And Jordan Peele is someone I think is great vision.
Sure.
And looks at really simple things in a really different way so that it's not too far off kilter, but it's just enough to throw you off but draw you in.
And I think time-wise...
And that's comedically
he was
dramatically.
He was a fan, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, so... Yeah, man.
Let's move towards... let's talk about trailers, first of all.
Sure.
So trailers this week, a couple of interesting ones came out. Let's start with Dumbo.
All right.
A lot of people got very excited.
I don't know about this guy who's directing this movie because I'm not wearing a shirt that supports him.
Oh my God, I hadn't noticed that. That's amazing. Now, if you're listening on the podcast rather than watching it on YouTube, you won't get it, but Scott is wearing a...
Nightmare Before Christmas button-down shirt.
Yeah.
You're welcome, America.
It's pretty sweet. Where did you get that?
Hot Topic.
You see, I haven't been in Hot Topic for so many years.
I like the fanboy stuff, I'll be honest. So I always get stuff. They have a cool Jurassic World shirt like this as well.
Oh,
and
cool.
I'm thinking about purchasing.
Nice.
Yeah.
But Dumbo, Tim Burton, doing Disney. I really like the look of this. I mean, I refer to it this week online as the last Elephant Man. I think is what I refer to it as, because it looks very much kind of the esque of the Greatest Showman.
Oh my God, yeah. So someone, one of my friends went to CinemaCon and they told me about this because they knew that I'm a big Tim Burton fan. But they also said, Scott, you're going to love this because it's Tim Burton meets Greatest Showman. And I'm like, no, you did not just say that. And then when I watched the trailer, I'm like, oh my God! Yes, it is.
Yeah, it was the greatest Showlephant Man.
Yeah.
I think is what I refer to it as. No, I think I'm really, really nice. Like, really nice casting. It looks beautiful.
It does. I think it's going to be really depressing.
Yeah.
Don't you?
I think there'll be down moments, but I think as a Disney movie, I don't think they'll take
it. Like the original Disney movie was really depressing, and it was hard, and it on a lot of children. Sorry, a lot of children.
I will say that. The trailer has an emotional beat to it.
It does. Mm.
And that, to me, is what makes it a fantastic trailer. I can't wait. My guess is that it's going to be all over Incredibles 2. So on the big screen, it's going to look amazing.
I can't wait to see it.
So if it has an emotional beat and center to it while you're watching it on a laptop or your phone or whatever, you can only imagine how beautiful it'll look on the big screen. As far as it depressing, listen, I get it. Tim Burton's good at that. He's good at handling that. When you look at an Edward Scissorhands and such, he can be good at hitting those emotional beats just right, so that even though it could be a little bit of a downer ending, you leave the theater feeling good.
I just saw
something special. Dumbo could be that something special when it's released that year.
And some of the Disney live action movies for me have really, really worked. I mean, I love Beauty and the Beast. I love Maleficent.
Me too.
I really love Pete's Dragon, although it didn't do business. Cinderella, I wasn't a massive fan of, but this I'm really into.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm hoping that this is the return to form for him. I feel like he's, we were talking about Ben Affleck earlier being on that downward spiral. I feel like he's kind of had some misfires.
Yeah.
Especially the last one with Fox. I can't
even remember. Miss Peregrine.
Which did well, but it was disappointing. And that felt so perfect for him to direct, but something was missing from it. And it almost felt like he didn't have full control of that.
Let's talk about The Grinch.
Okay.
Animated new movie from the guys, Illumination, who obviously did Despicable Me, they did Minions, did Secret Life of Pets. I'm not blown away by this trailer. It looks kind of cute and funny, and it's coming out for the holidays. So I think, you know, if I see more of it, I might be up for it. And to be honest with you, a lot of the Illumination stuff, I haven't loved the trailers, but I've loved the finished product. Didn't blow me away, though. Guys?
I thought it was okay. I'm with you. It's fine. I think it knows its audience. The trailer knows its audience, and I think kids are going to probably grab their iPads and watch it on repeat over and over again until it comes out.
Yeah, and it's funny because we were talking about this before the showtime, and it's tough. I mean, they're going to have to hit emotional beats, right?
Yes.
And it's difficult. Like when a 25-minute cartoon that was made in, the 60s?
Yeah.
Boris Karloff narrating. When that hits all its emotional beats that you need for a Christmas special in 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And it hits it all and it's rewatched and the ratings are fantastic every single year. It's interesting. I mean, not that I was blown away. I'll probably end up going seeing it. And I think that sometimes the Illumination trailers are actually end up better than the movies.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see what happens at this point.
A little trailer that came out this week that passed a lot of people by, actually, but it caught my attention. The Little Stranger.
I did not see that, unfortunately.
It's I'm really impressed by that. It's a ghost story from the director of Room, and it's got a really nice cast, and it's basically a ghost story. I mean, you need to watch the trailer to get the idea of it. It's not entirely different to kind of similar, you know, children ghosts kind of thing we've seen before, but it certainly had a little bit of an atmosphere and a little sort of, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but something a little bit different to it. And I mean, movies about ghost kids and missing kids freak me the fuck out. You know, that does real, that and like movies with dolls in, like seriously, they really make my ass clench. But I'm super drawn to them, and I think this would be really good. Dimitri, did you see it?
No, until you had mentioned it. I like the director.
Yeah,
I like these kind of stories. They can work if done right. Who's releasing this movie?
I don't know offhand. I'm not quite sure. But I mean, the cast is great. Domhnall Gleeson's in there,
and
he's doing really, really well right now.
When you talk about a chameleon actor, right? I mean, this guy can do comedy, romantic comedy. He can play a villain. He can play a really good guy.
Yeah.
Sci-fi,
whatever.
Whatever it is.
He's really on a roll.
So I'm on board with ghosts and horror movies and ghost stories, especially for kids, with kids. Yeah, it'll work.
Another horror trailer that hit the internet this week. I did not like the original movie in this series, but it's becoming a series. Unfriended, Dark Web.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't like the original one?
I didn't like Unfriended.
Oh,
I found it really difficult to watch. And it came out kind of around... It just didn't work for me. Right. And there were a couple of movies that came out around the same time that looked really sort of tense and they looked really different. The Gallows was another one.
Yeah.
And neither of those movies worked for me really at all. But I do like the idea of Unfriended Dark Web. This seemed to work for me. It's pretty much exactly the same, but it tends to work for me in a slightly different way because it adds that extra element. You liked Unfriended?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I saw it at South by Southwest.
Yes, I did.
Yes, I did.
Fuck you.
Yes, I did. Fuck you very much. I just thought at the time there was something about it felt original and different.
Yeah.
And I liked the whole idea of everything being shot like from a computer screen perspective and just watching that. And I felt maybe for a younger generation is why they really connected with it because this is their freaking life.
Yeah.
And Blumhouse knows I feel like it's going to be like a talk about Blumhouse.
Yeah. But they're nailing it right
now. They know what they're doing, mm-hmm. and they know their audiences for every single film that they put out.
Right, and this is going to work. This one's a tilt film, so
they know not to spend as much money on it.
Right.
But they know that there's an audience for it.
Yeah,
and I think
Tilt was upgrade as well.
Yes,
it was upgrade.
Yeah,
and I think that the way that the Tilt deal is done, that it's duties are separated between Universal duties. The duties are separated between Universal and Neon. So
yes.
They use the clout of Universal to sell the picture, get the picture into theaters. Neon does a lot of the marketing materials that I believe Universal, again, uses their clout to get the stuff up inside of theaters. I don't know. I think it would just behoove them, if you're going to make a Tilt, just go with Neon. Neon, I think, has proven that they can release a movie. So,
talking of distributors, both Sky and Ashley have said that actually Little Stranger is Focus Features. Thank you for that. And it's Lenny Abramson. Who was the director of that movie. So thanks to everybody in the chat for filling that out. Zeno, I was saying, Unfriend was kind of dumb. Very good premise, lackluster execution. I agree with you on that. Sky saying, Unfriended. Didn't see the first one, not seeing Unfriended Dark Web. I think this could be the one where a lot of people who didn't see the first movie, like the Ouija sequel. Yeah. We talked about a few of these before. Mm-hmm. Annabelle, the sequel to the original Annabelle, which I didn't like. I love the sequel to that. This could be one of those that gets a kind of a second lick of the ice cream and then draws new people
in. What is it about it that really sells you? Because this one doesn't sell me as much.
I just kind of like the idea about the dark web, bringing in that it just has more of an essence of peril, like there is a real adversary out there, rather than something that's more of a general issue, and also the dark web scares me. So I'm kind of like, that to me is something that's genuinely having dealt with people online who've made physical and threats to kill me online over the last couple of years. It is it's something that's kind of genuinely quite real, rather than something like, oh, there's someone out there, there's a boogeyman. I just think it's more based in, even though clearly it's fantasy, it's based more in reality. That, to me, is more fucking terrifying than any monster or anything else, or, demons. And that's cool. Talking of which, The Nun.
Oh, yeah.
I did not like The Conjuring 2 as much as I loved The Conjuring. I wasn't a fan. And I thought The Nun, which was a character which was added to that movie very last minute, was not part of the original mix. Then I heard it was getting her own standalone movie, and I was like, Annabelle didn't turn out well. Corin Hardy's directed this. This trailer, it was only a short trailer, a teaser. Yeah. I'm going to have to buy some new pants for this, because it genuinely looks shit yourself tense.
That last scene of this trailer is amazing.
I fucking spilled I spilled coffee on my computer. I was watching it in the morning, and I'm like, I'm waiting for the jump, but I was expecting the jump to come from
behind. Yes.
And then when it happened, I was
the redirect.
Shit.
The old switcheroo.
So, look, what Juan and company have done with this world, has been, I think it's an,
they
think
created
it's
their own franchise.
It's their dark universe.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's been very smart and fun and scary.
Yep.
And, to your point, it's very rare that a sequel can be better than the original.
It's very rare.
Annabelle, I was not a fan of, then Creation comes out. And I was like, okay, how does this one work so well?
Yeah.
And it really brought everything home. I didn't dislike Conjuring 2 as much as you did.
I didn't hate it. I just thought The Conjuring was so strong when that came out.
It's hard to top that movie.
With the thin guy, I was like, it just didn't. It felt like it was. It lost. It wasn't as focused as the first one.
The first one's a very hard movie to.
That was so good. Seriously. Mm-hmm. That was a film when I saw it in the movie theaters. I actually genuinely was like, This is fucking
came
terrifying.
Out of nowhere.
Came right. out of nowhere. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about what is in theaters this weekend. Let's start off with the big one. Incredibles 2 previews 18.5 Thursday night, which is staggering. The closest to that was 9.2 million. That was Finding Dory. Looking at a weekend of somewhere between 125 and 140. Dory is the top animation at the moment, 135 million for opening weekend. I think this is going to go 140, 150 potentially this weekend. A lot of people are super excited about this. I mean, Incredibles is not the biggest Disney Pixar movie per se as a brand, but the love for Incredibles is huge.
And it's across the board.
Yeah.
So it's not just boys and girls.
Yep.
It's men and women. I mean, yes. We're talking, this is four quadrants for animated.
Yeah.
Everybody.
And it's also
Weeknd,
really good.
Yeah. And the
it doesn't
Weeknd
just rely on that.
Is fantastic because it's Father's Day this Sunday. Mm. So, all right, kids, Dad, we're going to take you to Incredibles 2. So you may not see that huge drop from Saturday to Sunday.
Yeah.
Obviously, with 18 million, kids are out of school.
Right,
18
right.
million another... is a lot of money for a Thursday night where I think the shows started at 5 o'clock, at least here in Southern California, which is weird because they usually start at 7.
Mm-hmm.
So you got an extra show. The movie is 2 hours from what I saw, but I don't think that's going to impact box office at all.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, it's also a really good movie, which helps a lot. I was really impressed with it.
I'm going to be the odd man out and actually say that I thought it was mediocre.
Okay, interesting.
I thought that the idea in this story was very dated. I feel like, unlike Zootopia, where it was very relevant and fresh and risky at the time, this one feels like something that should have been done about 5 years ago.
It's interesting you say that because I was talking to Brad Bird. I did the junket for this for Reuters, and I'm going to be posting the results of some of that online later. But he actually came up with this idea originally when he was doing the press tour for the first Incredibles movie 14 years ago. So when you say it's outdated, actually this is a 14-year-old idea. So long before this current thing where we've been pushing women to the forefront, which quite rightly so, doing the stories about strong females, this was something he was thinking about, you know, a decade and a half ago.
Interesting.
So
that makes sense. And I just thought that, you know, it was very much like a Mr. Mom remake on some hands, you know, on some level, I guess you can say.
Mm.
And I also felt that even the villain, not going to give anything away, but the villain's name is Screen Slayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, like, what are we in the 90s? Like, everything about this, and now that you say that, it was all an idea from 14 years ago. It makes sense. But to me, I'm surprised that so many people are embracing it because a lot of it does feel like it's not up to date with today's world.
I think another reason that people are embracing this, I think, is the fact that there's nothing out there that is that family movie right now. Obviously, people have turned their backs on Solo. There's not really a lot out there for that younger end of the market until Jurassic World sequel comes out next Friday. I just want to touch on this. We were talking about the Screen Slayer. I was talking to Brad Bird, and this is, if any other trade outlets are watching, you might want to use this. The Easter eggs in these Disney Pixar movies are really, you know, I talked about that with Brad because they're in there. There's lots of them. And I said it's the anniversary this month of the release. It's kind of coincidental of Poltergeist. Craig T. Nelson was in Poltergeist. Mm-hmm. And obviously a big part of Poltergeist is flickering TV screens and interdimensional stuff. And in this, Craig T. Nelson, Jack-Jack, and we've seen this is not a spoiler, it's in the trailers and stuff like that. Jack-Jack is now able to, among many powers, be interdimensional. So he's trying to tempt Jack-Jack back with a cookie, which reminded me of Poltergeist. And I said this to Brad Bird, and he was like, That is not my intention, but that makes absolute sense. So so Brad Bird is now saying that is a Poltergeist reference, because I told him it's completely coincidental. But to me, I was like, Craig T. Nelson, interdimensional, trying to tempt a child back through from the other side. And he was like, that makes total sense.
So here's my big question for you. Since, did you see it?
I have not.
Okay. So my big question for you is,
yep.
If Jack-Jack was not part of this film,
yep,
would you feel as strongly about it?
I would feel possibly less strongly about it because Jack-Jack is such a really successful character in this. But I also like the villain in this. And I have to say, I think the way that they flipped the roles with Craig T. Nelson but didn't do it in a really, oh, ha, 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 we've got to do this kind of way. I think that would have that the way they'd done that was actually a really big sell. The other kids are kind of fine. I mean, the love storyline is yeah. is fine. But I mean, really, and I wanted a bit more Frozone. But generally, I mean, I really liked it. I was a little bit nervous about it. I think always when you go back, and we've seen this with, you know, Cars was fine, but Cars 2 was not great. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, Toy Story was a franchise that got stronger and stronger. I genuinely really enjoyed this. Interesting point on Frozone, and again, this came out of the interviews that I was doing for Reuters. Because it's taken 14 years to do this one, I spoke to the guys about it and said, well, you know, what if it takes 14 years? Samuel L. Jackson joked with me that he has actually done so many additional takes of these things that if he's not around in 14 years, there's loads of shit in the can.
Wow.
So he's like, I've left them enough takes of lines so that if they wanted to, because he was like riffing and doing his own thing and alternative lines they could have used, he's like, it's in a vault somewhere. And also, he said that there's also, I said, you know, you never say motherfucker in this movie. It's one of the few movies you don't say motherfucker in. And he said, oh, I said it. So somewhere, there is Samuel L. Jackson as Frozone saying motherfucker, which I kind of like the idea yes. of, which is sweet. So let's move on to the other movies this weekend. Tag is the other big movie. Review this for IGN. Like this more than I thought I was going to do. I gave it an 8 out of 10. It's not, and we've compared this... You guys will probably mention this as well. Game Night, another strong comedy from Warner this year. It feels very different to me. I liked it more than I thought. 1.3 million previews, looking at a weekend of 12 to 16. I mean, this weekend is going to just be owned by Incredibles.
Did you see Tag?
I did.
What did you think?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I thought the cast chemistry is what kept this movie together.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about the ending, but I thought that they used something as a crutch that they didn't have to, that mm-hmm. they could have really focused more on the friendship. But I thought for something that could be deemed as a one-joke movie, I thought that they did really well. It was fun to see them together. When we talk about, we just talked about what movie, and we said the woman were great, Isla Fisher.
Yeah. Okay. Keeping Up with the Joneses.
She was hysterical. She was hysterical, but it was also fun to see Jeremy Renner have a good time.
Yes, yeah. I know.
And to see...
It's the best performance he's given in the longest time.
I like the Wind River a lot, but this, to see him in a comedy was just like, thank God. And he was able to use all of his Hawkeye training for it. But he did it with a wink and a smile, and he looked like they all had laughs.
And he did it with two broken arms.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, couldn't believe that.
Jesus Christ. I stubbed my toe, and I'm like, I need 2 days off. Fuck.
Yeah. They were all good
together. I'm with you guys. I was not looking forward to this movie at all. And when I saw it, I was really surprised by how entertaining it was. I love that the, like you were pointing out, the focus on the friendship, it really sold the movie.
Yeah.
And there, it's an odd casting choice, every single one of these actors in these roles, but somehow it works. And Jake Johnson, who I got to interview last week, pointed out that the reason why it worked is because these are guys who were like trying to remain friends, even though they were friends when they were 13. And they don't really have any common ground anymore besides playing tag. And that's what keeps them together, and that's why the movie works. Yeah. And I agree.
There was a certain... I mean, obviously, the whole game of tag and then playing it, being an adult, they're just genuinely... You know, we speak to a lot of talent, it's like, oh, you look like you had fun, you know, doing this movie. Right. They genuinely did look like it was... They were playing a game, and it was fun, and this was just also a movie. And John Hamm was great in this. I mean... Thank God that someone's found something for Hannibal to do.
Yes,
you know, in a movie where he's not just like an ancillary role, he actually has a real point of being in this movie, and he gets some really great moments. I mean, to be honest with you, all the male leads and all the women leads, they all have something to do. In this.
Yes.
The Wall Street Journal journalist, not so much. She's kind of...
Oh, I liked her. I love
a little bit.
Line.
I would have liked to have seen more development there.
I
love
that line about this is why journalism is dying or something like that.
Yeah.
what I liked about, I liked that as the framing device.
Yep.
Yes.
And I liked her, in fact, it would have been an interesting choice to have had the movie be seen more through her eyes.
Mm. Yes.
But I enjoyed that framing device. Now, when we talk about Game Night, again, another ensemble piece where I think, again, a cast that really gelled together. But even when you had them off doing their little adventures, they were hysterical together. This one relied a lot on physical comedy as well, which isn't really done a lot today.
No.
And I think everybody had their moment. And again, my one thing is that you didn't have to rely on a crutch that sort of kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And but together, I think cast chemistry is what kept the movie going for me. And I laughed. And it delivers some summer fun and laughs.
This is mentioned in my review for IGN. It, for me, did something that Game Night did this in a very different way, but it was taking a classic trope of a bromantic comedy, relationships between men, that things like The Hangover did 10 years ago, 9 years ago. And it just brings a really refreshing twist to it. And I think doing that in a really nice way, taking those cliches and those tropes, but doing something really interesting and different with them, I think that's really good. And one thing we're lacking at the moment is not movies aimed at men, but movies about male friendship. And for me, this genuinely was a really solid play on that.
But I also think we're lacking, like, this is a movie that I think can speak to everyone.
Yeah.
Men, male, female.
The women in the screening, but they were laughing as hard, if not harder, than the men.
Because there is one thing that I found.
So it's not like a sausage fest movie.
Absolutely not. And one thing that I found when I walked outside of the theaters, it brought back, like, the nostalgicness of, I remember when I was with my close friends. Whatever we were playing, whether it be tag, kickball, or Star Trek cosplay for me. So it brought back that kind of nostalgia that I thought was very, so it had that sweetness and heart. And that's why I think women can relate to it too, because they had girlfriends and they played whatever it was they played. And they may not have those same friends anymore.
The only off-putting thing for me was when I was watching this screening on the Warner lot this week, there was a guy next to me who was laughing, which is great because it achieved what it needed to do, but he was laughing like Salacious Crumb, and it just kind of threw me off a little bit at everything. Like, everything like was the funniest thing ever. We've got to wrap this up very, very quickly. Superfly, I've seen this. You've seen this as well. It's 1.2 million, 10 to 12 million for the weekend, 1.2 in previews. I have to say this is one of the worst films I've seen this year.
Oh, my God. It is atrocious.
And I mean that in no disrespect to the filmmakers. I just think it's horribly handled, and I think it's really poorly timed.
Is this the movie that you were talking
about? This is the movie that I was
this
talking
movie
about.
Terrible.
It was just so bad. Oh, I think it does a disservice to everybody. There's a lot of really good cast in here. It's a great idea. And I think it just is horribly misconceived. It plays out just like a really bad, long sort of video, a music video, but it just, and I think when we're trying to build up so strong of getting away from this black people are hoodlums thing. Now, I'm not saying we can't have movies with black people are hoodlums, but it just totally does away with things. It plays into that thing. It just was bad.
Jennifer Morrison cast as that bad cop. And
that was terrible.
And the cop singing Riding Dirty when he was going through the car. Like, I'm like, what am I watching?
I couldn't, that film couldn't end. I mean, a lot of people in these movies, they put a lot of time and effort into it, and they're very proud of the films they turn out. But I'm really sorry. For me, I know this is not aimed at me. I'm aware of that.
Yes.
But also, it was just, and I know people who were target audience who came out of this and were kind of like, that was not good.
Jesus, I bought an advance ticket for it for later.
Well,
tonight.
I'm so sorry. I really wanted to like Superfly, but it just was such a massive crushing disappointment for me.
Oh my God, it was so bad.
So such a disappointment. There's two movies you want to flag up very quickly.
Oh, sure. There's a movie called Set It Up. It's on Netflix. It just streams today. It starts streaming today. It's with Zoe Deutsch and Glenn Powell. Really love this movie. Female writer, female director, starring a female. Great romantic comedy. Yeah. Nice throwback to the 90s. Feel-good film. Really fun. And those two have amazing chemistry. And I hope they do more movies together. Another Zoe Deutsch movie this week opening. And we were talking about Lea Thompson earlier. Yep. She directed it. Her other daughter Maddie Deutsch wrote it. And this is a family movie about a quarter-life crisis, which a lot of people in their 20s are definitely going through once they're out of college. They don't know what they're doing. And a really great story about family and trying to figure out what to do after college and mm-hmm. what to do with your life. It's playing in 10 theaters across the United States and also on VOD. Highly recommend checking out both these movies, very much so.
I'm still going through my quarter-life crisis.
Are you?
Yeah.
We didn't get to talk about the fact that Leah Thompson is going to pitch a Howard the Duck movie. We can talk about that next week. We'll save that because yes. I do want to talk about that. Okay, fantastic. A couple of other things I want to flag up. If you want to check out some of my work, a couple of pieces on Forbes this week. One is to do with the opening of the Kung Fu Panda attraction in the new DreamWorks Theater at Universal Hollywood.
You went yesterday?
I went yesterday. That was really good. There's a nice little interview with the guys involved in that up on there, and there's more coming on that in the next couple of weeks. Also a piece with the guys behind from Ink Factory about Hotel Artemis, talking about the fact that even though that movie didn't do particularly well, which was criminal because it's really, really good, that they potentially could expand that universe. And I've got a really nice piece going up with Doug Liman. Some interesting stuff about Tom Cruise in there, which is going up over the weekend. So please do check that out. Guys, okay, let's start with you, Dimitri. Where can we find you and tell us about Anatomy?
In just a couple of hours, you'll be of able a movie, to find not yours. Me onto...
just generally, like boobies and dicks. Boobies and dicks. Okay, where can we find you?
Boobies. So I'll be Anatomy of a Movie. We'll be talking about Ocean's 8. We'll yep. be dissecting that, analyzing that, and we'll be analyzing Hereafter, which that is such a polarizing horror film. I can't really wait to talk about that one in Ocean's 8 as well. You can find me on Twitter. Please support me at D Movies. I couldn't get B Movies. I tried
Hereafter?
B Movies.
Hereditary.
Yeah. Well, Hereafter with Matt Damon. Yeah, we're going way back.
Yeah, so Hereditary on Anatomy of a Movie.
Thank you. Thank
I
you.
Was very confused too, but I'm sorry. I was like, maybe we could talk about a retro movie. I don't know.
you know what? Maybe after this, I should be in the Hereafter. In any case, at D Movies, at D Movies 1701.
And Scott, where can we find you?
Right. So, just like
that
Simon...
That went very well, by the way.
Yeah.
Nobody noticed. It's fine.
Nobody noticed.
Scott, where can we find you?
Church.
Simon's trying to get the F out of here. He's
Jesus,
like, let's
I'm
keep
not
going.
Shit to
let's
do!
Go! We Live Entertainment. My God, I was so busy this week. Hey, I didn't like Superfly, but I had two great interviews for the movie, so you can read them there. I had a wonderful interview with Leah Thompson, Zoe Deutsch, and Maddie Deutsch, which you can also read there. Jake Johnson, John Hamm interview over at We Live Entertainment. I've done a lot of posting this week. Please support my postings and read my stuff. I appreciate it so much. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at The Other Scott M.
Or in Hot Topic.
That's right.
Sweet after.
That's right.
And it all comes around.
Absolutely. Right. And my name is Simon Thompson. You can find me at Showbiz Simon on Instagram and Twitter. This has been Meet the Movie Press on Friday, June the 15th. If you like the podcast, if you like the show, please tell your friends. We do this show for you. The bigger audience we have, the better. We really appreciate it. So do tell your friends. Like, subscribe, and comment. We really appreciate that. We'll be back next week. Have a great week. And I don't know. Maybe go watch some movies.
Maybe.
Watch some movies. We'll see you next week. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principal.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire...